everyone. Welcome to another episode of Investing in Real Estate. I'm Clayton Morris. We're so glad to have you back here on the show. And by the way, thank you for pushing us up into the top charts of iTunes. Just checking the numbers today. We're in the top 10 right now of all business podcasts on iTunes. So thank you, everyone, for doing that. It really means the world to me, and hope that we're bringing a lot of value to you as well. I've been getting so many emails from people all over the world. Just got one from Tokyo this morning. So thank you very much. It really means the world to me. And again, I hope we're bringing a lot of value to you in this show. And today's episode, we're going to bring a ton of value to you as well. People have been loving our case study episodes, the episodes where not necessarily, I want to say, expert investors, someone who has 300 houses or who runs a real estate company, et cetera, but someone who is not necessarily a new investor either, but maybe has a few properties under their belt. So today, that's what today's episode is all about. I'd like you to meet Eric Miller. He is, I don't say an expert real estate investor, but certainly branching out from his home real estate market in Chicago, Illinois, and moving into new territory. And we're going to talk with Eric today about his experiences, hurdles, fears, anxieties, and triumphs. Eric, great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So tell us a little bit about your background and how you got involved with real estate investing. How many years ago was that?
Well, probably started a little bit differently than most people. I was 19 when we actually bought our first rental property. I was in college. My landlord called me up and said, "Hey, I'm getting divorced. I got to move my properties. Would you be interested in buying it?" You know, I said, "Hey, you know, that sounds great, but I don't have a job or money." Or he's like, "Listen, I'm a mortgage broker. I'll work it out." So called my parents up, talked to them about it. They helped out, co-signed the loan, no money down. And that was my first property. Lived there for a few years, rented it out to my roommates there, made a couple of extra dollars, nothing crazy. Kept it for years after we graduated, and eventually ended up selling it to a friend of ours. His son went to school there. Then we moved up to Chicago. Kind of a similar situation again. Bought a condo. You know, our first son came along, and that 700 square foot condo was no longer appealing to us. So
right.
we hit the suburbs, but we kept the condo. We rented it out for a few years. We probably still have it now, but the association changed on us. We had to, they no longer accepted tenants. So when her lease was up, the condo was gone. It, you know, we used it as a, like, kind of a weekend place for a while. A friend's daughter lived there during the week when we weren't there. And, you know, it wasn't fun anymore for us. So we sold that when we moved out to the suburbs. Now, during that time period, still, we bought, my dad and I partnered on a commercial building in town. And then, about 2 or 3 years ago, we partnered with some friends, and we started buying property up in Northwest Indiana, close to where we live. You know, we were familiar with the market. We didn't want to deviate too far. And then just recently, we started looking outside our market. We're kind of priced out of it here. We get balled in with the Chicago group. And so we started looking down to Indianapolis, and got hooked up with you through I actually heard you on a Bigger Pockets podcast. And that's how we got into the Indy market.
That's great. So it sounds like real estate was in your blood from an early age. A lot of people have these sort of fears, I think, about getting into real estate or sort of jumping in because it seems maybe a little foreign to them. But did you kind of grow up around that? You knew that it was a great investment and you knew that you were going to do it long term?
Sure. I mean, my parents had some rental properties. I remember as a little kid, my grandparents had a couple 6-unit buildings, and he'd take me there to unload the you know, the wash machines and let me grab a handful of quarters out of there. And, you know, as a kid, that's exciting stuff. And I think those little things, they stick with you over the years. And, you know, like anything, you start something new and you're going to have a little bit of fear with it. But I started at such a young age and, you know, I didn't have anything, and it makes it easier if you don't have anything to lose. I mean, what's the worst that could happen?
Right. So take me back to that first deal that you constructed. So it was no money down. If someone, you know, just getting started listening to this show right now wants to dive in and get started, how did you construct that deal? Walk me through some of the mechanics of that. Maybe help somebody else here who's listening.
Sure. That deal, I mean, that was a long time ago. It was an emergency situation on my landlord's part, and he basically just unloaded it for what he owed on it. My parents actually co-signed on that loan for me. So there was enough equity built into it because we bought it for more than was owed on it, nothing down, and we just went from there. Yeah. I don't think that's a very similar typical situation with most people.
Right. But one of the keys of that though is that it's, you know, a distressed property really at the heart of it. Right. Which would you advise people to go out and just like look retail, you know, call up a local realtor and try to buy properties that way? Have you ever done that?
We have bought some through a realtor, and but I mean, I'm a huge fan of I got a do-it-yourselfer gene. My dad was, you know, hey, never hire anyone, try yourself first, weekend warrior kind of projects. And you know, the first condo in the city we bought, it we rehabbed it. When we moved to the suburbs, we bought a property that I bought it on a whim. I was done with the city. My wife, she first time she saw it, she cried. There was 2 inches of standing water in the kitchen, and it was a disaster. So we fixed that up. Oh, here's my guy right here.
And that's why you do it right there.
There you go.
Is that your son?
Say hi, Jack.
Hi.
But,
so we did that, bought that property, and then the house we moved into now was a similar situation. We wanted a house. I was done with the remodel project. So we bought a house here, ripped out the whole first floor and redid the basement. You know, it's kind of in my genes. I would definitely say you have to go distress properties. Buying retail is just, it's tough. It really is. It's tough.
What advice would you give to someone starting out, like getting their finances in order to think about buying rental properties? I talk to investors all the time who, you know, maybe they're a contract employee. They don't necessarily have a W-2. They think that their credit score is faulty, but they really know that they want to dive into rental real estate. What advice would you give to somebody like that?
You know, I talk to people a lot about it. It's something I'm very passionate about now. It's, I think the biggest thing is you just got to find a way to do it. You know, I recently was talking to a friend of mine, and he's, you know, I'm actually at his house helping him do some tile work. He's like, I'd love to get into this rental real estate. He's like, I just don't think I have the money. Man, you got 80 grand in cars in your driveway. Let's be honest. You found a way to finance those two things. Right. If you're serious about it, it's not that hard. If you want to take the time, if you want to drive a used car for you, your car payment for 1 year is a down payment on one of these properties.
Right. Yeah, it's true. I think people, they talk themselves out of it, or they don't think that they can do it. So they find convenient excuses whether or not to take action. And there's so much private money out there, right? There's so much private money out there. It's just a matter of getting creative and actually making those relationships. Did you go the private money route or was pulling money from your own paycheck?
I haven't gone that route yet. It's money from our own paycheck right now. We also had, you know, we took out a home equity line to get some of the balls rolling on these properties. You can, you know, essentially come in as a cash deal, and then turn around and refinance them on the back end of it.
So talk a little bit about that, because we have a lot of new investors who are listening for the first time. And so maybe their mind is being blown to hear that you can use a HELOC. I mean, that's what my wife and I do, but I'd love to hear you explain what you did. You took out a home equity on your primary residence?
Sure, exactly. You know, most of us, you know, are already homeowners as is. It, you know, you have equity built into your home. If you call around to your local banks, like they'll work up the numbers for you for free. They'll send a home appraiser out there. It doesn't cost you anything. You can find a good rate. So what they do is then you have, say, for ease of math, you have $100,000 in equity they're willing to give you. They open up an account. They give you a checkbook. You can get a debit card associated with it, the whole thing. And then you can go to purchase rental properties with it. You can come in as a cash deal. So say the property is $50,000. You can literally write a check, $50,000, close on it. And then you could turn around, go back to that bank and say, hey, I got a property here. It's $50,000. Would you be willing to give me a loan on it? And most of the banks are going to go 20% on that. So what's that, $40,000? You get a $40,000 loan on the property. Essentially, it costs you $10,000 to do that. It's a little labor intensive, but I mean, it's totally worth it. It's much easier to go that road, because during that time, that property is bringing in money. It's bringing in income for you. It's just not sitting there.
You also mentioned then the refinance on the backside of things. Sure. I think people have this idea that, okay, I'm going to tie up $40,000 in a property, you know, like one of ours in Indianapolis, and then that it's tied up that way. What has been your experience over the years in refinancing out of properties you've purchased?
Sure. It's easy. I mean, banks love property. They love knowing they can come in there and take it from you if something went sideways with it. If they can go down there, get an appraisal on it, look at it and say it's worth X amount of dollars, we'll give you this. I mean, it's incredibly easy to do that. It's easier to do it after you've already purchased it than trying to go through the traditional way of getting a loan with the bank, having the appraisers, having the inspections. it's much easier to do it once you already own the property.
That is so key. I mean, it really is. Going through, in fact, most of the deals that we do are, you know, cash deals on our properties. But there's been, you know, one or two where we'll kind of work with a new investor and we know that they're in a hard way and they want to use traditional financing. Fine. It ends up, though, taking forever on the front end. It doesn't make much business sense for us. And then, you know, it's 60 days later and they're still going through pay stubs and trying to get actual financing on the property. It'd be much better if they were able then to just pay cash, close on the property, and then if the house is rehabbed, there's a tenant in the property, and then they go to the bank and they're able to get refinancing on the back end, right?
Sure. It's you know, I recently had breakfast with a banker friend of mine that's doing a lot of them. He gave me my first loan. He's been an awesome resource to have through this whole process. And, you know, we're sitting down there, I'm telling about what we plan on doing, and just sitting there, he's like, yeah, I can give you $300,000 to start getting some of these properties. No problem at all. It's, you know, he's like, but as long as you're willing to buy them first and get them rehabbed, he's like, we don't want to mess with a house that needs to be completely he's like, we're not in the construction business.
That's great. So when your business, obviously you have a day job, how have you managed to build this into your life? You can hear, I heard your son come in there. You hear, I work from home as well, my home office. You hear the church bells ringing behind me. How have you managed to build investing into your work life?
Sure. Like my work life now, I'm fortunate. I'm luckier than most people. I can leave, go look at properties when I want to. It's something that, you know, my wife and I've recently started just doing on our own. And we feel it's important to bring the kids into it. Cause, you know, I have an office job, man. I'm in the insurance world. So, you know, my kids come in and they poke around and eat candy off everyone's desk and they blow out of there. And it's kind of like dad's job's boring. But, you know, when we go work on one of these properties, we'll bring the kids along, let them trim the bushes, rake it up, you know, spray for weeds. That's exciting them. I give them $3. They go to Dairy Queen and, you know, everyone's happy. They actually get excited to go do that work.
That's great. Yeah, it's so important to involve them in the business, plus the tax benefits of involving children in the family business and the family LLC. So tell me how you've constructed the family business for taxes. How have you set up your business, your investment structure? So many people ask the question, well, should I set up a C-Corp? Should I set up an LLC? I know you're not a tax advisor, but what do you recommend? What's worked for you and your wife?
Sure. We have an LLC set up for the rental properties. We have, you know, one LLC for the commercial building. We have one LLC for the partnership that I have with my two friends. We have another one set up for the rentals we are buying down in Indianapolis now. I mean, the tax benefits are huge. The depreciation, we just met with our accountant recently. And, you know, you have to take advantage of every opportunity you can to pay, you know, not avoid tax, but pay less tax. There are loopholes that the government provides for you. And you know, it's exciting to look at some of the stuff. You know, we were looking at other markets. You know, her cousin lives in Kansas City. I know that's a nice, you know, rental market now. And it's like, well, maybe we can schedule a time, go look at some properties down there. And the whole trip, it's a write-off. You know, we spend 2 days down there and works out good for everyone. We just recently went up to, you know, New Buffalo, Michigan yesterday, actually. And, you know, we're driving around. And you start when your mindset changes, you start to notice these little things. And there's homes for sale. It's like, wow, we can buy one of those and Airbnb it. You know, it's a... Right. And in the weekends it's not used, we can use it. So I think your mindset changes after a while.
It does. And I think, you know, maybe your mindset changes too. Obviously, you were very hands-on doing things yourself and being involved in the process up in Chicago and other areas. What was it like for you to start working with someone like us, you know, like a turnkey provider where we're kind of doing everything for you? Was there that tendency to still want to kind of get your hands in there?
Yes and no. At first, you know, when we first started talking about it, you know, I was like, who does your construction? Who does, you know, your property management? And we actually road tripped it down there to see the whole group. We looked at a bunch of houses. I mean, I think Bert calls them field trips and he just drove us around and we looked at these properties.
Met with the team. Yeah.
If you have any trepidation, it's worth the visit to go down there and see what people are doing. If this is the road we want to take to have our financial freedom in our life, this is the way we want to go. It's worth the visit. It's worth to look people in the eye and see what they're doing. It's worth looking at the properties. You know, you owe it to your future self, and you also owe it to your tenants that they're in houses that you're proud to own. You're happy with them.
Right. Talk about the tenant side of this, because that's something that's very important to me. I talk about this idea. I've talked about it on Bigger Pockets and other ideas, this sort of holistic idea. You know, where I consider it this Aikido symbol. If anyone who's familiar with martial arts, there's this symbol. It's like a circle with a dot in the center. And this idea I visualize for the business, which is I want my contractors taken care of on the one side. I want my clients taken care of on this side. I want my tenants taken care of on this side. I want a whole, I want everyone to have a win-win. So at the end of the day, tenants go home to a house that they're thrilled to live in. They're near public transportation. It gets them to and from their job. They're near a park. They come home. They feel like, wow, this house has been, you know, renovated. It's been gutted. And now this is mine and I can call it home for a few years. So that sort of holistic approach where you're not shortchanging anyone in this whole process. So your philosophy about tenants and the other properties that you own and the ones that you bought through us, how do you, where do you come down on what kind of a life you want to give to your tenants?
Well, it's twofold. I want them, like you just said, I want them to come home and not worry about if the roof is leaky, if this outlet's broken. I mean, their happiness, no matter how you cut it, this is a customer service business. And the happier your customers are, you know, the happier you're going to be. I don't want a leaky roof. I don't have to deal with that either. So, you know, in our properties, we want to make sure everything is 100% done, perfect, clean, ready to go. And I feel we're going to keep better tenants longer. And then if they do leave us in a year or 2 years, their turnover is easier. We're not coming in every 2 years and replacing stuff that really should have been replaced on the front end. And the big picture of things, it's not that much more money. We bought a property last year where we had to redo the kitchen. Okay. So like for a perfect example, like should we put in a dishwasher? Should we not? Should we not? And like when you lay out what the cost of a cabinet is and what a dishwasher costs, you're talking like $75 more. I mean, put the dishwasher in. I mean, I feel these little investments are huge, just huge opportunities to put your best foot forward and have a great long-term business. I mean, this is something I want to transition to my kids someday. I don't want them mad that I skimped on, you know, little things here and there.
Right. They're going to have to come in and clean up dad's mistakes.
Right.
Right. Exactly. Oh, you didn't put in new water heaters. I mean, that's what we, you know, do in all our properties. I mean, I believe my philosophy is that you've got a rock solid house for 15 to 20 years. So, you know, we put in new plumbing, new electric, new water heaters, furnace, everything, new windows so that, you know, 15 to 20 years, you've got a rock solid house. What are some of the downsides? You know, you'll get this question from people, I'm sure like your buddy with the cars in the driveway. Well, what are the risks? There's got to be risks. And what are some of the things that you kind of try to protect yourself against, hedge? Obviously, you're in the insurance business, so you know all about risk. What do you try to mitigate?
You know, right there. I mean, it's, you know, back to your original thing with having quality properties people are happy with. I mean, I don't want to be sued any more than you want to be sued over, you know, little things. I mean, there's risk with anything you do. I could, you know, send a check to, you know, our stock guy and he could poof, it's gone. I mean, there's risk in everything. The way to mitigate it is have, you know, see what kind of properties you're buying, feel comfortable with that. Make sure you do have proper insurance policies. I mean, there's nothing you can do that's 100% guaranteed. If you're looking for that, you're never going to find it.
Right. You're never going to. And that's something I also talk about, which is if you're 80% sure of something, then that's probably good enough. I mean, you're never going to be 100% sure of anything. I even say this to my wife, like even just getting married, like you might say you're 100% sure, but I'm sure on that wedding day, you're still like, am I 100% sure? you never know 100%. So, you know, even having babies for crying out loud, until that baby comes out, you're like, I think am I ready for this? And then you're holding the baby and then you're 100% sure. But, right. You know, you really never, ever can prepare yourself. I'm curious, though, from the insurance side of things, because obviously it's something you're knee deep in, something I am not. I usually get, you know, basic liability coverage. Let's say I buy, you know, one of my houses, $35,000, $40,000. I'll get, I think, coverage. My wife handles all of this with our insurance agent, but, you know, like $55,000 and we get certain liability coverage. What do you recommend? Obviously being, do you kind of go crazy with your liability coverage because you're in insurance, or what would you recommend to people just starting out?
Just starting out. I mean, you don't need to go crazy with it, but I mean, I hate to say you're wasting money, but you're kind of wasting money. If you have no assets to take, what's the benefit of having a $5 million liability policy if, you know, you scrape together enough for a down payment on a house and you're renting and, you know, your situation needs to fit your needs. So that's what's a good conversation to have with your insurance agent. I mean, I do feel a little more liability is good. It's inexpensive. I mean, to go from a $500,000 to a million, it's like $30 a year. I mean, it's a lot of extra coverage and it's minimal cost. So that is a good conversation to have with your insurance agent.
Do you do sort of umbrella policies under all of your rental properties or do individual policies?
We do an umbrella policy over all the properties now.
Okay. And is there any, what's the upside to doing umbrella versus individual?
Well, each policy has an individual underlying limit. So once that limit is exhausted, then the umbrella policy kicks in. So say, you know, I don't know, something happens where you get your underlying limit's 500,000, they sue you for a million. So instead of you going solo on that other 500,000, your liability policy under the umbrella would kick in then.
Okay. What are some of the tools and things that you've studied over the years to kind of, you know, get you into the mind of real estate investing? Some of your favorite books?
You know, it's kind of like, you know, thinking about this morning, our philosophy is a little bit of a hodgepodge. Like, we're big fans of the Dave Ramsey, you know, keep your debt low, don't have a lot of existing payments. Or, you know, the Mike McAllowitz profit first. I mean, your freedom number system was really what got us really going in Indy, because we took it a little bit further. We had the freedom number, you know, got on the board behind me here. We did the freedom number, and then we said, okay, that covers our expenses. If I lose my contract, whatever, the kids are eating still, everyone's happy. But then we took it the next step, and it's kind of like our legacy number. What do we feel like we can live on where we're giving money away? We can continue to invest money. You know, we can continue to do whatever we want. And then that was our new number. And we kind of broke it down even a little bit further, because with this system, with real estate, every unit we buy, every property essentially buys me 24.3 days of, you know, freedom. It's, you know, it's a mindset change, you know, not to go back to that car situation again, but I was recently looking at a car, and I'm not a car guy, but my own's getting old, and, you know, so it's 25 grand. It's like, would I be happy buying a $25,000 car, or would I be more content knowing that I just bought myself 3 weeks of freedom? And it's not like the first 3 weeks of retirement. It's 3 weeks forever. As long as that property is maintained and producing, it's the only thing. You literally buy time in this business. That's a resource that we all want more of.
I love that idea of the legacy number, because, you know, I think the first step really is that freedom number, but then wrapping your head around this idea of, well, what is that legacy that I want to leave for my family? And also, you know, hey, taking it to the, you know, 10Xing it really, and being able to take these vacations, and it's not just covering your monthly expenses, but it's like going to Italy and, you know, taking the cruise with the family, or, you know, 3 months off and going to New Zealand or whatever it happens to be, right, and kind of building that into your legacy too.
Sure. It's important. It's, you know, important to me, and time is a concern for me. You know, my dad retired 59 and passed away 9 months later. So that's something that kind of hangs on me, where, you know, I don't want that to happen. I want time. And this is the best way to do it. I don't know any other place out there where I can literally sit down with a calculator and say, okay, if I invest X amount of dollars, I can buy myself that time. So
parting words here. What advice would you give someone who's just starting out, who's thinking about taking action, but hasn't done it yet?
You know, you just got to get at it. I mean, there's so many resources out there. There's so many podcasts. I always said I've never went back to school. I was a terrible student, just like wasn't my thing. But like, I'm addicted to these podcasts. I'm addicted to going on Bigger Pockets. Just put yourself out there. Everyone knows a local real estate guy. It's the only business where if I, you know, I walk up to someone, hey, say, you know, you're buying real estate in this market, why do you like it? They'll sit down and talk to you. They'll tell you all about it. Like, they'll connect you with other people. In my day job, man, if I called someone and said, hey, what are you doing? They can treat everything like it's a top secret, you know, but real estate, they throw it out there. Put yourself out there, find your freedom number and get at it. I mean, leverage those properties. Just start with one. It's a mindset change.
Yeah. That's great advice. Great advice. Eric, if someone wanted to reach out to you and say hi and kind of pick your brain a little bit further, can they do that? Is there a place people could go, or?
Yeah, sure. Let's put up my email in the show notes.
Okay, perfect.
I'd love to. I mean, put it in there and reach out to me. It's something I'm passionate about. I think it's great. Everyone should be involved in real estate one way or the other.
Awesome. Awesome. And check Eric out too. You're on Bigger Pockets as well, right?
I am. I'm not on there enough, but I'm poking around.
Cool, cool. All right. We'll put your email in the show notes. So if anyone wants to reach out as a newbie investor and pick your brain, that would be great. Eric, it's been great having you here on the show. Love working with you, and continued success to you and the family. And we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Clint. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. And as a reminder, everyone, you can go over the show notes page. Just head to morrisinvest.com/podcast. We'll have the show notes for this episode and some of the resources that we talked about on today's show, some of the books, and downloads, and things that Eric mentioned, as well as his email address. We'll see you back here with another episode of Investing in Real Estate. Have a great week, everyone.